Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Saturday, August 21st, 2010, and this is show number 274. I'm recording a day early this week because we leave tomorrow for what my friend Nancy has affectionately named our European nerd tour. Anyway, Steve and I are both so excited to get to hang out with Don and Mrs. Don, whose actual name is Barbara, Bart and Wing, and the inimitable Nightwise and Niana, along with tweet-ups to meet new friends and finally make human contact with the likes of Gazmaz, Stu Helm, and Peter Boots. And then we get to do re-meets with Stefan Lesage and the MacCrack lads, Justin and Dave, and of course the lovely Pat Mon. I'm also hoping to meet Steve Harris of Reinvented Software, the guy who wrote Feeder. It's a four-hour drive for him, and he claims he's going to do it, but I don't know. I wouldn't drive 4 hours to meet me. Anyway, I'm sure I've probably forgotten some people, but I'm so excited I'm not thinking straight. Luckily, I pre-recorded most of the show last weekend because I knew I'd be flipped out with packing and remembering passports and all that silliness. I feel kind of lonely right now, though. I mean, I don't have Kevin and Carell and everyone else yelling, "Save!" So I guess I'll have to do it all by myself and remember. Anyway, let's dig into the show. Well, I'd like to introduce everybody to my friend John Mallinson, who was actually one of the lunatics in line for the, 10 to 24-hour wait line to get the iPhone, and he's done some interesting things with his, and I wanted to introduce you to him. Hey, John, how's it going?
Hi, Allison. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. Been wanting to do this for a while. So you said you had a segue from the iPhone purchase debacle.
I do. I definitely do. So as you know, you and I both know, I was there for a combined total of 16 hours. Oh, you know, of course, had I known that going into it, I probably would have gotten out of line. But the interesting thing was when I got home, my wife asked, first thing she asked me was, "So let me see this phone and show me something cool." So I opened the box, I turned the phone on, and I wasn't really impressed myself having installed the iOS 4 update about a week prior. So the wow factor just wasn't there for me the way it was when I first went from my BlackBerry to the iPhone 3G.
You know, I had the exact same feeling, and I wondered whether maybe it was partly that and partly I was so angry that I'd stood in line all that time that I think I resented the phone a little bit too.
Oh, yeah, I totally had the same feeling. I mean, as far as resentment. So playing around with the phone for a while, it was, again, the passion just wasn't quite there. And it just wasn't the same feeling as before.
Had we not had iOS 4, though, I bet you're right.
Exactly. I mean, what they could have done, what Apple could have definitely done is that had they released the iOS 4 update maybe the same day, I wouldn't have had that free preview,
I do notice that how good it is, because when I go to the iPad, I'm like, "Oh, come on, give me iOS 4. It's like, no folders. Now, you're kind of a lunatic on your phone, though. How many actual folders do you have with, like, more than six things in them?
Oh, well, now that I have my 32 meg iPhone,
gig,
I have three windows, but one of those windows is dedicated solely to games. And with that, I believe I have, I think, what, nine is the limit, or eight? And each pane is filled with just games. I'm a sucker for 99 cent to $5 games.
It's so funny because people worry about the price of the iPhone. That's not where the cost comes in. It's not even the monthly fee. It's, it's only a dollar.
Yeah, only a dollar. How can you not resist? They make it so easy.
So you've taken things up a notch, though. When we were talking earlier, I told you that my rule is there always has to be a problem to be solved. So what's the problem you chose to solve here?
Well, the problem I chose to solve here was, first off, just alleviating my kind of boredom with the phone itself and just getting that passion back, that interest back, because after AntennaGate, I couldn't wow people and say, "Hey, look at my cool phone," because the first thing they asked was, "Well, what about the antenna?"
Yeah.
So I had to impress myself. So one day, ironically, I was sitting on the couch watching Prison Break on Netflix with my wife, and as we both do, my wife and I, both semi-geeks, we both have our laptops in front of us while we're watching TV. I came across an article regarding jailbreak me and how easy it was now.
Right.
Because I'd always heard about jailbreaking a phone, but it just seemed too technical, and it just wasn't convenient. There was way too much work involved to to basically jailbreak a phone.
Oh, yeah. I tried, and I didn't even succeed.
Exactly. And this site now is purporting to simply go to a website on your iPhone and simply slide the little slider across, and your phone would instantly be jailbroken over the air. So that sounded too good to be true. My heart kind of skipped a beat, and I had to go for it.
The sign of a true geek. So the problem to be solved is because we can.
Because I can, exactly. So again, and once my heart started racing a little bit, Allison, I just knew that it was the right thing to do, and it was the fun thing to do. So I went for it without even thinking about any potential repercussions. So as I'm jailbreaking my phone over the air, a couple of things started going through my mind once the install was being performed. The first one being, well, you know, what if it voids the warranty if something bad were to happen? Since, you know, Apple, I believe, gives you a 1-year warranty. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of out the window. But my biggest fear was, will this still play nice with the iTunes ecosystem?
Oh, you know? So could you have your foot in both camps?
Could I have my foot in both camps, or would I be banished from the gated iTunes community? And that was something I definitely feared. I did not want at all, because I love the iTunes experience. And that was something that I just felt like, you know what, I've already made my decision, so I'll have to deal with it. But hopefully I can still come to visit.
So what did you find out?
What I found out after actually jailbreaking the phone, and luckily I did do a backup and restore, because part of the instructions were to actually do the backup and restore. And I usually backup and restore or backup my phone each day when I sync it to iTunes.
Right.
So what I found after jailbreaking it was, it didn't really look that much different. My phone, it looked just as it had, you know, just as it looked before. I thought maybe it would look like a hacker's phone after jailbreaking it.
All dodgy and open source looking or something.
Exactly. All command line and, you know, funky looking screens. But
now that might be what Nightwise would like it to look like, but normal people.
Yeah, it just looked totally the same. I mean, for a second, I had to wonder, okay, well, what's different about it now? So one of the first things I immediately noticed was there was this little app now on my phone, Cydia, however people want to pronounce it.
We're going with Cydia.
Let's go with Cydia then. So there's this app on the phone called Cydia. I go through that, and lo and behold, it seemed like this whole new world of just applications that I know I'd never see on the iTunes store. You know, things like tethering your phone, you know, tricking your phone into thinking it's on Wi-Fi when it's not. So just want to share some of the apps that, you know, I've actually downloaded and installed and had an opportunity to play around with.
Oh, that's a good idea, because, you know, we hear about it, but it's like, well, why? What's my motivation? What can you do that I can't do?
Exactly. What's the big deal? And I'm sure Jobs and, you know, the Apple guys will come up with an app that does it, you know, that does whatever, you know, you need to do in one of the other app stores. But
only when we're allowed to.
Only when we're allowed to, and only when it puts money in their pocket and doesn't take money out.
Oh, wait, I'm sure Bart is screaming at his phone by now, hearing you talk about jailbreaking your phone. How about that open password?
Well, the open password is something I was very mindful of. I actually looked and did some minor research, not exhaustive, about what kind of viruses were in the wild when people first started jailbreaking their phones. And the funny one was the Rick Astley virus. You know, I don't know if you or your listeners have heard about that one, where, you know, malicious, depending on your feelings toward Rick Astley, could be malicious. But basically, the virus changed the wallpaper on your phone to Rick Astley.
So that I'm sorry. I still think it's funny. I know other people are tired of it, but it still makes me laugh every time. Before we get too far into that, I want to explain what I was bringing up here. When you first jailbreak your phone, it exposes you to malware, because there's a very well-known root password, and you have to remember to change that right away.
You do. So the root password on your iPhone is Alpine. There are a number of tools. If you were to simply Google, there's a lot of I believe OpenSSH allows you to change your passwords, and there's a command line terminal. It's about maybe 5 steps. You download a mobile terminal app through the Cydia store, or there's another app store called Rock. but you can download it through the Cydia store. And once you install that, you go through those steps, and that's where you get to see your geeky command line interface, and you can actually go ahead and change that root password, which I would encourage anyone to do who's actually gone through the process of jailbreaking their phone.
Good, good. Okay, now that we've eaten our vegetables, what's the fun part?
Okay, now that we've done the security piece, okay, the fun stuff. So looking at the applications themselves, one of the things that was surprising to me was I thought that going into a jailbreak store that everything was free, that everything would be free because it's this, you know, magical, you know, maybe slightly even communistic community where everything is free and people just build apps out the kindness of their own heart. But no, a number of the apps in the various stores do cost money.
Okay. You know,
and some are not 99 cents. Some are maybe $3 to $20. So they do have a real cost associated. So I just wanted to go through some of the apps that I particularly enjoy. The first one being, you know, the tethering app. There's an app called MyWi.
Okay. How's that work?
Now, the way MyWi works is it allows your iPhone to broadcast as it allows it to be a mobile hotspot. You can either do so via Bluetooth, or you can also tether your phone so that you can use it as a hotspot. One of the security mechanisms it allows for is it allows you to create a web password of about maybe, I think, 64 or 140 bit encryption, which I have no idea what that really means, but it sounds better than just an open hotspot.
Unfortunately, WEP is pretty much a 4-year-old can crack, but it is better than nothing. But it's too bad they didn't do WPA on it.
Yeah, and that's what I hear too. I mean, I understand WEP is pretty weak. I mean, you could probably walk into most people's homes and look under their mobile routers and see what their WEP key is, since they put them on the routers these days. But
well, I always figure, though, if you're in my house and looking at the bottom of my router, I've got other issues. But the other thing to think about it is your iPhone probably can't send the signal out all that far anyway.
I would like to believe that, too. I don't know how far it can broadcast, but the interesting thing about this is you can actually set the power of your broadcast signal so as to reduce battery consumption.
Oh, okay.
Me, of course, I just always have it at 100% when I do use it. But even thinking about use cases as far as when am I actually going to use this thing, I tell myself, you know, whenever I go to a hotel maybe, or if I'm in an airport, maybe I'll use it. But I don't do that much traveling, so I'm still using the trial version of the software, and I'll probably end up buying it when the need arises.
So it's I think you told me it was about $10, right?
No, this software is actually $20. So when I told you 10, it was because it's $10 to upgrade from the previous version of this.
Okay, that's pretty steep, $20. But hey, what? You'd be paying $20 a month to tether without jailbreaking it, right?
Absolutely. I think it's between 15 and 20. And if you go that route, I think AT&T immediately puts a data cap on your data consumption.
God bless him. All right. Yeah. Well, you and I tested that, and you flipped it on, and I opened my iPad, and there it was, and it worked.
Yeah, it works great. It's an awesome thing. So that's one of the apps that's pretty cool. Another app that I really, really enjoy that's more in my price range as well is an app called My3G. Hmm. Now, what this app does is it basically, you can have it trick some of your applications into thinking they're on Wi-Fi when they are in fact not.
Oh.
So what that does for you, Allison, is it immediately eliminates that 20 meg limit data cap. You know, like when you go to the iTunes store and some of your apps have updates, but they're over the 20 meg limit.
Or podcasts.
Or a podcast that happens to be 21 or 22 megs.
Right, right, right. So you can just skip over that because it thinks you're on Wi-Fi?
Exactly. So that's no longer a problem. One of the selling points of My3G, and also let me mention the price is about $3.
There you go. Now we're talking.
Exactly. Not two $2.99, but
$3. It's so funny. Above $3, I'm like, whoa, too steep for my blood, you know, but I'll walk in and buy a $6 cup of coffee.
Exactly. Yeah. They have us trained in that regard. So one of the selling points of My3G, the way they advertise it as well, is FaceTime over 3G.
Oh, yeah.
That's what, you know, we've all been talking about since the Jetsons came on. And, you know, FaceTime over Wi-Fi is a pretty cool thing. But, you know, FaceTime over 3G, it sounds even cooler. So you and I will have to try that one of these days. I'll have call you over FaceTime 3G and see how it looks on your end. So we'll give that a try and maybe report back to the listeners on how it went.
Yeah, that sounds fun. What else you got?
Well, a few other things. Well, actually, I was kind of surprised. I thought there would be like this huge list of applications that I must have, but there really weren't. There were just only a few cool things that I had to have. And because the majority of the apps were not 99 cents to $3, you know, I didn't download quite a few things. But the experience itself, I felt kind of like I believe Android users feel when they go to their store, never having seen their store, but it felt like not only do I have the iTunes ecosystem working for me, I now have this whole nother market space that I believe Android users have access to.
So you do still have access to the iTunes ecosystem. You aren't banished?
I sure do. And that's definitely worth mentioning too. So although my phone is jailbroken, I can still sync, purchase, download applications from the iTunes store. I'm not banished.
Now, what happens if you allow it to do that security update that closed the hole?
I'm assuming it will break something. So I haven't done that. So as far as that particular security vulnerability, there was actually a PDF patch in the jailbreak store prior to Apple releasing there.
Interesting. So you were more secure more quickly than had you not jailbroken.
I was. Now, yes, they could have released something malicious, but it's generally agreed upon in popular sites that is a valid patch, the one that's released in the Cydia store. So I'm using that. So yes, my PDF vulnerability was patched before Apple released their 4.02 patch.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, it's a quick other thing. So there are a couple other apps too, none that are really exciting to me. And for those who really want to go down that deep, dark alley of, well, now that my phone is jailbroken, let's install some free stuff. You know, I haven't been brave enough to go down that alley because it kind of reminds me of the whole Wares experience back when I was in college.
Wares? You know,
Wares, like the Wares sites as far as sites where you go to crack software or
I haven't ever heard that term before.
Really? Okay, Wares with a Z, of course.
Okay.
In leet speak. But there's an application called Installus, which allows you to do that type of activity, but not too much interested in that. I'm definitely a proponent of developers getting paid for their work, whether or not Apple or AT&T condone it. So I haven't done that, but
isn't about stealing and cheating. It's about being open and being allowed to do what you want to do.
It is, or at least that's how it is, you know, for me. So there are a number of users, you know, that I know who actually install, you know, free programs without paying for it. But for me, I prefer to, you know, make sure that developers get paid. Otherwise, they'll stop developing.
Yeah, it only makes sense.
So can I tell you about another cool thing that I did on my phone?
Sure. I think we got time for one more.
Okay, sure. So the last thing, I actually installed Flash on my jailbroken phone.
Flash? That's just wrong.
Yeah, you know, and it was one of those things where I thought, okay, this is cool. I'm going to be more awesome than anybody because I'm going to have Flash running on my iPhone and nobody else does. So I went through the steps.
More awesome than anybody.
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, naturally, the phone has to be jailbroken first, of course.
Right.
There's an application called Flash. So Flash with an R instead of the L. You install that package, you reboot your phone, and voila, you have Flash when you open up Safari. But the experience itself has been less than great.
Hmm.
So going to a site in Flash, you can easily see that, you know, most sites just simply aren't optimized for mobile Flash.
Oh, okay.
So it's
I've heard of it being a bit dodgy and not quite as smooth as one would hope.
It's not. And the truth is today, the majority of the sites that have Flash sort of content, there's a mobile application that provides all of that. So it's really not a necessity.
Yeah, you know, I don't see too often where I actually sit there going, oh man, I wish I had Flash right now. I understand one place that happens a lot is trying to look at menus for restaurants.
Good point.
That's like the main place people miss it. So I guess it's nice in a pinch, but I don't seem to really need it that much.
You're right. And it's funny you mentioned menus in restaurants, because nowadays what I end up doing is going to Yelp and seeing what people like to eat at any given restaurant, and then I order that.
And then it's not in Flash anyway, huh?
It's not in Flash anyway, exactly. So that kind of details my experience. Is, you know, if there's anything else you think your listeners may want to, or the listeners out there may want to hear about, you know, be sure to let me know.
I sure will, John. Hey, this is pretty interesting. I'm glad you did it instead of me, because I chicken. I did it on my first iPhone, but now it's such an integral part of my life. I can't imagine if something went wrong, I'd have a heart attack. So I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this morning.
My pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye, John.
All right, take care.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that. I really liked talking to John. I thought it was fun to get his perspective, because he is living a little bit on the edge there with that whole jailbreaking thing. But I like his attitude, because he knows his risks and he's just willing to dig in and give it a shot. Adam Herman sent in a letter about his experiences using ScreenSteps. I'd like to read it to you and tell you what he found out about it. Here's what he wrote. I got an email from my teacher yesterday asking how to sign in and edit the school website, which is hosted and runs on Google Sites. I told him how to do it 3 months ago, but he's forgotten how to do it, so I thought I'd give ScreenSteps a try. I downloaded the free trial onto my Windows partition in Bootcamp. See, there is a Mac version, but I wanted to take the screenshots in Windows because my teacher in school uses Windows. I installed and opened it, and I was creating the lesson in less than 30 seconds. The interface was so easy to use and powerful. I opened up the capture palette and took all of my shots. Capturing shots is so easy. You just click on the camera and select what you want to shoot. If you need to capture a drop-down menu, you can select a delay time so you can open the menu before it takes the screenshot. Once I had all of my screenshots, I added the text to the images and annotated the images. ScreenSteps gives you an array of tools to show the reader exactly what you want them to see. Outline boxes and circles, arrows and sequences. You can also customize the text, links, color, font, etc. Once I was done with what my teacher asked me to show him, which was signing in and just editing text, I put in extra steps like adding and editing pictures, pages, and navigation links, because I was actually having fun. ScreenSteps made what was at first a chore into a fun project, and it looks great. Since the tutorial shows all the basics and some intermediate things going in Google Sites, my teacher is going to give the ScreenSteps tutorial to the students that will be in charge of the website next year so they can see exactly what to do. ScreenSteps is a brilliant, fast, easy, and fun tutorial maker that I recommend. Okay, I did not make Adam Herman say any of that. That was spontaneous. Now, he sent me a note saying he was trying it, a tweet, and then he sent out another tweet saying that it had gone really well, and I asked him to write up his experiences. I thought that was a pretty glowing review, so, you know, it's not just me and George from Tulsa telling you how great ScreenSteps is. Be sure to use the coupon code NOSILLA, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, for 25% off the purchase price when you go to ScreenSteps.com. Next up, I've got something I think you're really going to like. As always, we must start with a problem to be solved. Have you been to one of those big seminars where you're handed a little device when you go in, and they run a poll of the audience, and you get to see real-time how people are answering questions as they ask the audience? I find those are a great way to keep an audience engaged. At least I pay attention, and I hardly ever pay attention to any of that stuff. And I've never walked away without learning a little bit more about how people think on a certain topic. But let's face it, doesn't it seem a bit archaic to rent those devices, pay people to count them before and after to make sure someone doesn't nick them, and then mail them back to the supplier and all this? Oh man, that's just an old school way of doing things. Come on, it's 2010, folks. We've all got phones on us with at the very least text messaging. Most of us have smartphones nowadays, at least the people that go to my kind of conferences. We have email, Twitter, web browsing, you know, at least one of those on every phone, right? Well, my friend and I decided to think, we were thinking about this, and we figured something like that had to exist. But how do you search for it? How do you describe, you know, those little handheld things where you answer and you see the on-screen results into Google? That doesn't make a very good Google search. It's a really hard way of finding something. But guess where that kind of search does work? Twitter. I posted the question, and in less than an hour, I think it was actually more like 5 minutes, Dan Eckmeyer, also known as, VA3ETS on Twitter, came back with the perfect solution. He suggested an online service called Poll Everywhere at PollEverywhere.com. Well, it could not be simpler or more effective than they've made it, and I think they've priced it really well, too. When you go to Poll Everywhere, you can create a free poll for 30 or fewer responders. 30 is a pretty small number, but it lets you play with the tool to see if it'll work for your needs. Let's jump in and play with it first, and then towards the end I'll go through all the pricing. On the front page is a big, giant Start Your First Poll button, and it says it takes 30 seconds with no sign-up required. Well, I like it already. This takes you to a screen where you can create one of three kinds of polls. First is a multiple-choice poll where you define a list of possible answers. Sounds good. The next option is a free text poll, which means your audience can type in anything they want. Finally, there's a goal poll, which is used when you want to set goals to raise money. They suggest this is a way to receive pledges for donations to a nonprofit from people via text messages and use the real-time pledge thermometer during real-time events to add excitement and encourage other people to pledge. I figure that multiple choice polls are probably the most useful place to start, so let's go there. I like to put people in a little box and measure them. None of this free form nonsense for me anyway. I should mention that every bit of Poll Everywhere of the website is clean, easy to follow, and has short but very well-written explanations all over the place. The new multiple choice poll page is a perfect example of that. It says question at the top, and it gives an example. It says, ask what is your favorite color, with answers red, blue, or green. And then an empty field to ask the question. I'm going to ask, what's the best phone platform out there today? I type that in. Below that, it shows you three fields for answers. If you want more than three answers, there's a button for add an option. There's a pair of up-down arrows on the left side where you can enter the answers, which I suspect lets you reorder them. Finally, there's a keywords field. Now, mine showed red X's next to it, so I hovered over the obvious question mark that should give me some help, and there it explained to me that some premium plans allow people to enter text in their answers with keywords instead of using numbers. That's kind of hard to understand, but once I get into this, I think you're gonna see what that actually means. It is very helpful to be allowed to add keywords. Before I save my poll, we need to pop through the options in the right sidebar. You can leave all of these at the default if you like, and that is if you want to make that poll in under 30 seconds like they promised, but there are some interesting options. First is how often can someone vote? The default is once, but you can change that to any number or to allow them to vote as often as they like. Next is the reply message, none, or the default, or a custom message. Again, the custom message is only for the premium plans, but those allow you to customize that message with branding, a link to a website, or even telling them the right answer. Next up is a critical step not to skip over, even if you only have those precious 30 seconds. It's how can people respond to your poll? The service at Poll Anywhere defaults to text messages from the U.S., but that's way too restrictive for us. If you want to get some real traction, you can have them tweet their answer to @poll, or use smartphones and computers to go to poll4.com to vote. That's poll4.com, or they can use a web widget. All four of these are great options, and the last one actually allows you to embed your poll into your website. How cool is that? Finally, you can change who can vote on your poll. I'm not sure restricting access is super important because these polls would be kind of hard to find backwards. I'll explain what I mean about that later. In any case, there's a whole page explaining methods for having people register before they take the poll at polleverywhere.com/features/participant_reporting if you want to read a lot more about it. Okay, enough setup. Let's have some fun. I created that poll with the question, what's the best phone platform today? And I gave three choices, iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. I sent out a tweet to the poll with pretty much no instructions for anybody. I wanted to see how easy it was to figure it out. When you go to the link, you see three choices on a bar graph with a number next to each choice. That number is what they're referring to when they call it a keyword. Now remember, if you pay for the service for the one of the premium plans, you get real keywords. This is a little bit confusing because you're looking at these numbers, but they call it a keyword, so it's a little tough to follow. At the top, it shows you all of the ways you can vote. In my case, I went for text, tweet, and web. You can even choose which country from which people can tweet. text. That was a hard sentence to say, but I wanted to not end in a preposition. Anyway, you can change it from the United States to a bunch of other regions. If anyone wants to text, they send the text to a specific number shown with the body of the text message containing the number or keyword they want to vote for. Oh, shoot, I just ended a sentence in a preposition. Anyway, if they want to tweet, it's even easier and faster. The slowest way of sending in your vote actually is to use the text messaging. If you tweet, like I said, you tweet it to @poll, and then you follow it with the number you want to vote for which you want to vote. Finally, the easiest of all and fastest of all is if you go to the web. You simply go to http://poll4.com and type in the keyword number to vote. That's all. You're just going to get a blank thing, and those keyword numbers are actually completely unique, so typing them in will go to your poll, even though you didn't tell them where your poll is. I wonder how that's going to work if two people had real keywords set up. Like if I had iPhone, how would they know it meant mine? Not sure. What's super fun about this poll thing is that in real time on the web, in Flash, unfortunately, but work with me here, okay, you get to see the bar chart growing as people vote. That instant feedback is really cool. While I was writing this up, I tweeted out my test poll, and I could see the different devices gaining ground against each other. Now imagine how powerful that would be while you're doing a presentation. As you move your cursor around on screen, you see little pop-ups for instructions or settings, and one of them is for full screen. If you tap that on the website, you get your presentation looking even cooler on stage when you've got a big group of people you're showing it off to. Again, with the ending in the preposition. Gotta watch that. Anyway, I was showing this to a friend of mine, and he said, you know what would be really cool is if I could embed this in my blog. Well, they thought of that too over at Poll Everywhere. You can share and publish to Posterous, Twitter, or a blog/webpage. You can embed the poll itself so people can see the results as they're happening right on your website, or you can embed a simple chart that shows the final results without all the overhead of Flash. Their words, not mine. So you think this is pretty cool so far, right? But what if you're giving a keynote or a PowerPoint presentation? It'd be kind of a giant hassle to back out of your presentation software, switch to your browser, and then hit full screen, right? Then why not download and install your poll into Keynote or PowerPoint? They've thought of that too. Not exactly sure what's going on in this process, but let me walk you through the effect of following their instructions. First, you download their Slides Connection app and launch it. That simply opens a window that says, great, your Poll Everywhere connection is ready. I don't quite understand that. That launches a process as shown by Activity Monitor, but it used 0% of my CPU and it didn't show up as a running application. I was kind of confused by that. I was worried maybe there was something I had to quit the process, but it turns out as soon as you click OK, that process goes away from Activity Monitor. So if it's not an application and it's not a process, I wasn't quite sure what it was. Well, I kept poking around and finally noticed that this is actually a WebDAV server you're connecting to, and it showed up in my left sidebar of the Finder window on OS X as a shared server. By the way, this all works on Windows too. They kind of put the Mac stuff primary, by the way. So you do have to eject that when you're done to disconnect. It's kind of a tricky way they do that. Well, next you download your poll using either the Keynote or the PowerPoint link. I use Keynote since you know how I feel about PowerPoint. I don't even have that junk loaded on my machine. Open that file and up pops your presentation application with three slides. The first slide is an explanation for you. The second page is an explanation for your voters. The third page is mostly blank with a big sticky note in the middle that says, your poll will appear here when you play the slideshow. So to play the slideshow, click play in the menu bar and then play slideshow. And then it gives you a reminder to run the Poll Everywhere Connection app first. That step we already did. I tested this out, and sure enough, going into slideshow mode popped up my real-time poll. I had Steve answer the poll while I was actually in slideshow mode, and it actually updated. All right, let's talk about pricing now. Like I said, up front, you get 30 voters for free with one account owner. For $15 a month, you get 50 voters, and you can restrict access for voters, and you get email tech support. $65 a month, you're up to 250 voters, two owners, text moderation, and those useful custom keywords. Keep going up in pricing, and you start to get phone support. Boy, is that a funny slip there. It's not always called the iPhone. It's the phone support. Anyway, you keep going up in pricing. You get phone support and more owners, topping out on the Platinum plan for $1,400 a month. But if that's not high enough, they got a button that says, if you want to go higher, call us. Now, first blush for individuals, even something like the plenary account at $140 a month sounds extravagant. But think about $140 to just about any business. That's chump change. That's really close to zero. I can say that for sure because while it's a monthly fee, they have this giant banner pointing out that if you only have a single event, buy it for a month and then downgrade to the free plan at any time. Isn't that perfect? So $140 for a single poll at a single event, that is zero. That's absolutely nothing. But wait, it gets better. They even have pricing plans for K through 12 with yearly pricing, school-wide, and even district-wide pricing that's really inexpensive. And they have higher education options too. I'm telling you, these guys have thought of everything. I can't imagine what else I'd like it to do that they haven't already got covered and covered really well. My only complaint is that it is a little hard to figure out how to vote if you aren't using a paid-for plan because they say type in a keyword, but a keyword on the free account is actually a number, so it's a little hard to follow. Easy enough to explain to your audience in real time, though, and hey, you're getting it for free. I have to give my 100% stamp of approval on Poll Everywhere from PollEverywhere.com. I mentioned last week that the check engine light went on in Kyle's 2000 Honda Accord and how Steve had checked with the CarMD system from CarMD.com and how it had told him that the EGR valve had a problem. Kyle and Steve called up Honda Bob, gave him the information, and Bob drove out to take a look. Because he was pre-armed with the information about the EGR valve, he was able to check back in his really excellent computerized records, and he noted that the EGR valve on Kyle's car had been replaced by him fairly recently. So when he came out, he checked it, and he discovered the valve only needed to be cleaned. So he only charged us for the drive to our house, you know, he has a fee that he charges for the house call, and nothing else. He also gave Kyle advice that every third or maybe it was fourth tank, he should probably throw in a premium fill-up, but he also told him to gun it when getting on the freeway to help clean those things out. You can imagine how thrilled I was to hear that Honda Bob was advising my teenage son to gun the car. Thanks, Bob. But seriously, it is so nice to work with someone who's all over the technology, who comes to our house, gives practical advice, and doesn't charge an arm and a leg. If you live in the LA or Orange County areas and you drive a Honda or an Acura, be sure to give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hjbob@aol.com. HA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. It's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across with the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from BartB.ie. Just a little while till I see you in person, Bart.
Yeah, it's going to be so cool. That's going to be Chit Chat Across the Kitchen Table.
Right, right, right. With Katie on the other side of the pond to entertain us.
Yeah, should be fun.
It was fun. Right before we got on the air, guys, Bart and Steve and I were chatting, and Bart said, see you soon, to Steve. And we realized we didn't mean C in quotes. It was real C, meat space.
Yeah, how weird. Well, this real world thing, apparently it exists.
I know, that's going to be fun. All right, well, we should probably start with our vegetables here. What do we got up on Security Light, Bart?
We have a very paltry portion of vegetables today. Not enough to get very healthy off, but two important updates nonetheless. First, an out-of-band patch from our good friends in Adobe, who have patched Acrobat and Reader.
Mm.
Again, I'm pretty sure this is actually a patch that fixes a bug they claim to have fixed already. But anyway, Now they seem to think they've really fixed it.
Now, they have a band? I mean, you're saying out of band. I always think of Microsoft's Patch Tuesday when you say out of band.
As I understand it, they've been experimenting with a couple of different bands. The first band they were going to try was Quarterly, which was fail. epic fail. So I think the current band is that they're going bi-monthly on the second Tuesday.
Bi-monthly on the second? Every other month is bi-monthly?
Yeah.
Okay.
On Microsoft's Patch Tuesday. So every second Microsoft Patch Tuesday is also an Adobe Patch Tuesday. As I currently understand it, and goodness knows how often that's going to change.
Okay, so if you're running Adobe, or another option is just to delete the Adobe Acrobat Reader, right?
certainly one I'd be considering, yeah.
Go for your Foxit Reader on Windows and Preview on the Mac, and you're good to go.
Yeah, for most situations. There's a couple of exceptions, but generally speaking, that works for people.
Right, except when it's in the spec, right?
It's also some fancy features in Acrobat and stuff aren't supported in Preview. But for your average person, most of the time, it's fine. Like 80-20 rule, I think.
Yeah. All right. Any other vegetables?
One more vegetable. There was a security bulletin issued by Videoland, the makers of the fantastic VLC cross-platform media player.
Wow.
So they have had some issues which were patched in version 1.1.3, which would allow remote code execution, which isn't so good.
Ooh. So everything is vulnerable is the answer we have to keep looking back at, right?
All software is written by humans. All humans are imperfect. I was going to say infallible, but that's the Pope. It's not the same thing.
All right. And that's all? That's all we got for Security Light? Nothing for Microsoft?
No, not this week. Although I should point out, both of these are cross-platform, so Windows, Linux, Mac.
Ah. Oh, good point.
So everyone gets to play along on these two.
All righty. All right. What's our main topic today?
Well, I spent the week away. So I didn't really have much to talk about other than going away. So I figured we'd talk about my experiences at my parents' for a week. Which doesn't sound interesting, but there is a tech bent, I promise. The first thing to say is that my parents no longer have internet since the trees got too tall and blocked the satellite internet. So the only thing we have in the house is a MiFi connected over GPRS to a rather dodgy and rather intermittent cell tower.
Oh, GPRS is worse than Edge, right?
Yeah, yeah. Edge is enhanced data something something, and the enhancement is over GPRS.
Oh, jeez. How fast
is that? So to give an idea of what that's like, I think on average you get about 3 kilobytes a second.
Kilobytes?
Yeah. And I think the most I've seen all weekend was 6.1.
Oh, my gosh. You were flying there.
Yeah. And I don't think I'm made for that kind of existence. And certainly it occurred to me quite quickly that the modern software and hardware is not made for it either.
Hmm.
You really can't actually operate a modern computer or a modern phone like the iPhone without decent internet. Well, I was there from Tuesday up until Thursday. So for 3 days, we were downloading Security Update 2010.004 for Mac OS 10.5.
Oh, no. The whole time you were there, you were downloading it?
Yeah, the first attempt died at 90-odd percent when there was a lightning storm, and that seems to have made the cell tower cranky for a while.
Oh, jeez.
So then we started it again, and it took 36 hours, I think. But the 255 megabytes did come down eventually.
Oh my God.
However, iOS 4.0.2 is also out, and my dad now has an iPhone, but it's 500 megs, and we don't have any idea what we're going to do about that.
And can you download it, burn it to a CD, and mail it to him and have him pull it in?
Well, I could do that for the OS update for Security Update 2010.004, because you can get those standalone quite easily. But I've no idea how to do that for the iOS updates. How do I get them into iTunes, and how do I get iTunes to know that they're there instead of on the internet?
I think if you look in your God, there's someplace I'll look for it. I think in your directory you can actually find that file. It's actually in a directory on your machine, and if you put it in the same place, it might recognize it.
It's worth a try, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So if anyone has any suggestions for how they deal with keeping an iPhone up to date without any internets, that would be much appreciated. So
what fun is an iPhone with no internets?
Well, I mean, okay, when he leaves the house, his iPhone actually works.
Oh, okay.
And he's on O2 rather than on Vodafone, so he actually has Edge in the house on the iPhone.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
Just about.
No just <3G> about. Jeez.
It depends on where in the house you sit.
Oh, man. Sounds like Katie's house. Okay.
It's also interesting how the strangest of things rely on internet access to work properly. Take, for example, iPhoto.
Okay.
It was giving a spinning pizza wheel of death. You'd power it on, and you'd open one photograph, and then you get the spinning pizza wheel, and you'd have to force quit. And it turned out, I found out the reason eventually, it was trying to update its list of places. That's... because it detected an internet connection, so it went, oh, okay, excellent, I'll go off to the internet and get this update. And then obviously it was taking like hours for this small file to come in, and it was obviously not threaded properly, so the thing was locking up. So the solution, if you ever experience this, is to turn off the internet, i.e. disable Wi-Fi for on a MiFi, then open iPhoto again after you force quit it, then go into the settings and look for where it says to update places. I can't remember the exact menu location, and change it from automatic to never.
Oh, okay. Now, I've done that then, with Faces to speed it up, but I hadn't thought about Places.
Yeah, because Places tries to connect the internet, and that's where the problem kicks in here. And then turn the internet back on, and all was well. But it was a bit of a scary moment.
Just turning on an application that has nothing to do with the internet, or so you thought.
Yeah. I couldn't actually use my laptop, because just those little background tasks like MobileMe Sync and Dropbox keeping up to date with itself was enough to completely wipe out internet in the house for everyone else.
Oh, wow. And to find everything.
Yeah, so basically I just had to turn off Wi-Fi and use my laptop as if there was no internet at all. So basically the only thing I was able to do on the net while I was there was using my iPhone, which had GPRS-only connection, so the little O on the iPhone, was keep in touch with my email just about, and even emails from Flickr with the tiny little thumbnails were taking like half a minute to a minute to load just the little teeny thumbnails.
That's enough to make you go read a book or play cards or something.
It really is, actually. And then I had a couple of important emails to send and stuff, and it was all just such a pain in the backside.
Oh, I can't imagine. I mean, 3 kilobytes per second. I'm still just trying to... What's a dial-up modem again?
A dial-up modem is 56 kilobits, which means you divide by 8
to
get to kilobytes. So 56 divided by 8 is...
Like 7? 5? 5? So you are less than a dial-up modem.
Yeah. Averaging up to slightly above.
Maybe you should have gotten a dial-up modem in the house. You know, you could have doubled your bandwidth. Oh.
Yeah, not good. And really, stuff just isn't happy with it.
Yeah.
And I also discovered that I'm not very compatible with not having any internet access, because all of the things I usually do to entertain myself on my time off, like potter away in my Google Earth railway history project, it doesn't work without the internets. Or yeah. Keeping up with my various Flickr communities, that doesn't work without the internets.
Or even Twitter.
I wasn't on Twitter. I wasn't able to keep up my RSS feeds. I had 1,300 odd unread items when I came home.
Oh, wow.
34 unlistened to podcast episodes, and I had actually gotten 100% caught up just before I left.
You'd gotten caught up? I've never been caught up.
Yeah, no, I've been a bit more ruthless of late, deleting stuff I don't really like, and so I got caught up just about.
Wow.
So
what did you do for entertainment?
Well, there was television, which I guess is a start. And, of course, you know, family.
How hot family, but, really. Talking to people and stuff, huh?
Yeah, it just occurred to me how much companies like Apple and everyone really assumes internet access, because when you think about iOS 4.0.2, it's a bug fix for two vulnerabilities. There can't be more than a megabyte or two of actual changes in there, but they always send us the full OS. They don't send us chunks of the OS for iOS.
Right, right.
You get a full image of the entire OS. That's just... Only a company that would never dream that not the whole world has Cupertino-level internet would come up with such an insanely silly idea.
Before you said it, that never would have occurred to me either.
Sure, because you live in you know, the greater LA area where you have proper internets, but vast swathes of the US and of Ireland and of many places just don't have internet, and they're being utterly left behind.
I would never have thought of that, yeah.
So, you know, no one takes any account of them. There's no effort by any of the governments to get broadband to everyone by the looks of things. There's certainly no efforts that are working. And these people are just being stuck in the Stone Age because Dad's trying to run a business from home and he's having awful trouble.
So wouldn't it be easier to hire someone to cut the trees back so they could see the satellite? Are these giant trees?
Well, it's the forest that Dad planted, and I think he got some subsidies to plant the forest, so I don't think he can cut it down.
Well, I don't mean cut it down, just trim it back. Shorten it.
Well, no, because if you can imagine, we're in Ireland, so we're at the edge of the footprint for all these satellites. So the satellites are actually quite low to the horizon.
Oh, okay.
And it's a hill behind the house, so you'd probably have to cut a stripe of about 50 trees. so that you can see to the horizon again. Well, not quite the horizon, but to quite low down.
I'd still do it.
If something doesn't happen soon, I think we may hear the sound of the chainsaws.
Hey, I just found the iPhone software updates. If you go into your user directory, library, iTunes, there's a folder called iPhone software updates. And I see iPhone blah, 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 4.0.2 restore.ipsw. And it's 600 megabytes, so I think that's it.
It sounds big enough. So I wonder where we can download that from. Of course,
No, you have it. Burn it to a CD and then tell him to shove it in that folder. See if he's got that folder.
Which he should do. Yeah, right? That could work.
It might. Because you can download it without running the update, right?
You can, yeah. There's a download only button, yeah.
Right.
That might. But work. I must have it because I did update my iPhone.
Right. I've got two of them. Yeah, I've got a 4.0.1 and a 4.0.2. So I guess I could save 600 megabytes on my hard drive by getting rid of the earlier one, huh? It's history.
How many I have. I don't think I've ever cleaned up that folder. I wonder, does iTunes ever clean it up?
Well, I've only got two in there, so I suspect so. Oh, there's separately iPad updates. So there's 3.2.2 for that, which is another 479 meg.
That's where my hard disk space is vanishing to.
Well, I actually learned this from Don McAllister of Screencast Online, because he he did a thing about if you do updates to applications, you'll end up with a lot of versions of the same application over and over again.
That used to be the case at one stage. It lasted for a couple of months where that was happening because it was a bug. It wasn't supposed to happen.
Oh, okay.
So if you go and look in that folder, you'll find a bunch of duplicates dating back to a year or two ago, and then no more duplicates after that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But you'll still probably find a load in there if you look.
Yeah. No, I'm not seeing duplicate. It looks like there's one of each. Oh, no. Barnes & Noble e-reader. There's two of those.
No.
Yeah. Okay, that was off topic, but I did want to get that to you since it would be helpful.
Yes, excellent. We'll give that a go.
That way I can beat Connor because he was going to send it right after the show anyway. You know how he is.
Excellent. Yes.
All right. So here you are in the land of no internets. Any other technical bent to living there?
Well, the more interesting aspect is that this was my first time coming home since I got the iPad. Oh. So it was the first time any of my family had played with an iPad. And their different reactions was interesting. I suppose one of the most interesting ones is my mum, who's really not into computers. She knows how to do what she has to do. Took her a while to learn that, but she's now comfortable enough that I don't get a phone call twice a week saying, do I click OK or cancel? We went through that phase for a while, but no, she's come on a long way and she knows how to do everything she needs to do, but she would never experiment with computers or, stray off the beaten path or find them fun or exciting.
Well, maybe it's because she's got 3 kilobyte per second bandwidth.
possibly. Computers to her aren't fun. They're just a tool. And one that she's, she can use, but she doesn't enjoy, I don't think.
Right.
But the iPad, on the other hand, she loved. She actually, I didn't get to use it for pretty much the entire time I was there.
Oh, wow.
Because as soon as she'd settle down on the couch in the evening after dinner, she'd be like, can I use your iPad?
Huh.
And I didn't, at no point did I give a demo.
Oh, really? She just took it?
Yeah. She was playing solitaire with real cards, and I just slid the iPad in front of her the first day. I went and tried on that. With the Solitaire app open. Mm-hmm. And she poked at that for a couple of minutes. And then, is there anything else on here? I said, well, just hit the one and only button on the thing. And she went, I think it was Mayong or whatever I had on there. So she clicked on that and she played away and never asked me how. Just used it.
Interesting.
And as I say, I hardly got to use my iPad at all, which was annoying because there was no internet. So what else was I supposed to do?
What else did she play with anything else? Or was it mostly games?
She was playing with the games, and she really enjoyed reading Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, really?
And, sort of half moving the page and then letting it fall down again. Just because you can.
I think that's the most hilarious thing, that Apple spent the programming time to have the page be animated like that. Who else would do that?
I was listening to some podcast, and someone was saying that when they read a physical book, they're always fidgeting with the page. Mm-hmm. And they find that when they're reading on the iPad, they're doing exactly the same thing.
So it's not really a tactile thing so much as just a thing.
Yeah, it's just a thing you do. So you're curling the next page. So there you go. And they can do it. So they were happy. So it was just really interesting to me how it was a sense of fun and no intimidation at all. No sort of fear of doing the wrong thing. It just instinctively worked and, you know, very, very, very low barrier to entry there.
And now, can I ask, say, an age range for Mum?
Approximately your age.
Okay. But just not a technical type.
No. It's very much different interests.
Okay.
So another interesting reaction was my grandfather. Now, I must say, my grandfather would not fit the stereotype of your average 80-year-old.
Okay.
In fact, he reminds me of your mum. Oh. Or your mum reminds me of him, whatever way around you want to put that. But he was the first person in our family to buy a computer.
Oh, really?
It was an 8086 from Amstrad. He's now running Windows 7 on a Pentium 4, and I think within the next few days, I think he's about to order an iMac.
Oh, really? But he's got a good machine with Windows 7. Why would he need an iMac?
I think Dad may have shown him my photo.
Cool.
Because I said Dad changed an iMac about a year and a half ago, and he's absolutely delighted. And he keeps on showing it off whenever Grandad comes to visit, so I think it may have sunk in.
Now, is Grandad into photography then?
A little bit. He didn't really travel very much during his life because it was very much working class. He started off working in an aluminium factory, doing sort of the hard work with the forges and stuff. Wow. And then moved on to being a lorry driver and driving Senzano alcohol around Belgium. It's not martini, but it's one of those drinks anyway.
Oh, okay.
Driving that around Belgium. And he,
sounds like a guy I'd like.
Yeah.
Delivers martinis.
Yeah, exactly. And while he was working as a lorry driver, he saw the computer system that they used in the brewery to calculate everyone's wages and stuff, and the thing was half the size of a room. Mm-hmm. And he was fascinated by it, and he had said at the time that when he retired and if he could afford it, he wanted a computer, and everyone laughed at him. Well, lo and behold, he retired, the PC revolution came, and he bought a computer.
Wow.
So, you know, he was quite receptive to technology, so he absolutely adored the iPad. He went straight off to the kitchen to weigh it.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
So this thing has, you know, 10 hours of battery life and a gigahertz processor and, like, you know, was it 512 or 256 megs of RAM and this giant screen. And it's so small and so thin and it weighs so little. That must be, what, 2 kilograms? And it's a wonder. And it's like, oh, look, 700 grams.
Oh, wow.
So he was very impressed. And the touch interface, we spent ages flicking through photographs and stuff. He's planning a few trips and stuff. And, you know, just looking at different things and, you know, pinch to zoom and stuff. And he really, really enjoyed it. So he was kind of blown away by how far things had come, you know, from the half the size of a room to an iPad, which probably has 1,000 or 1,000,000 times more computing power than the half of the room.
Right, right.
So that was fun.
Oh, neat.
And then my niece, who's 2.5.
Oh.
She took...
You really are giving us the full age range of reactions.
Full age range here. So she's obsessed with photographs. I think it's from as a very young kid, we used to carry around the house and pointing at photographs going, who's that? And who's that? And who's that? So she can actually recognize herself as like a 2-week-old baby and stuff. That's it.
Opposed to her advanced age now, right?
Well, yeah, in fairness, a 2-year-old baby looks quite different to how she looks now.
Right, right.
But, you know, it's unusual for her not just to recognize herself as she is now in the mirror, but also to recognize herself when she was younger.
Yeah.
So, you know, my brother says, you know, do you have any pictures? Because I took some more pictures of her while I was there. And she said, oh, you know, show her the pictures. And I took out the iPad to show her the pictures. And I'd swiped through about 2 of them when out came the hand and she started swiping them herself.
Oh, didn't have to do any instruction, just watched you do it, huh?
Yeah, no teaching whatsoever. She had great fun with it. It occurs to me that if Apple ever come out with like a ruggedized iPad, it would be so great for kids.
Oh, that really would sell, wouldn't it? Because
they take
everybody's iPods and iPhones now. So if they had one of their own, that would be an interesting model.
They would just have to make it, you know, child proof,
right?
Because what do children do with stuff? They throw
them. Actually, one of the things I noticed raising kids, I always wondered, you know, I think if you raise a boy and a girl the same, they're going to react to everything exactly the same. It's that we stereotype them and all this. But you take a baby that can sit up in a high chair, you take a baby girl and hand her a crumpled up Kleenex, and she'll roll it around in her hand, flip it upside down, and then drop it when she loses interest. A boy will immediately throw it. All objects are to be tested for flight immediately.
Yeah, or eaten.
Yeah, well, yeah, there are the other options as well. But I never saw Lindsay throw something just to see if it would throw. But Kyle would always throw everything. That was the only way to test and see what it was.
That's funny because my niece is very much a thrower.
Oh, so maybe it wasn't a boy-girl thing.
Yeah, I think it's just different personalities, I guess. But no, she'll throw anything or kick it.
Well, that's sensible.
Yeah.
So we've got a 50-ish, we've got an 80-year-old, and a 2.5-year-old.
Yeah, so they were all exceptionally positive. But my dad's sort of, he's an engineer slash businessman. He's sort of a consultancy type person. Mm-hmm. And he's more interested in these things from a, can I do business on it point of view. Because he has an iPhone, he loves the iPhone, so he totally gets how it's a cool gaming device. But he's like, but I have an iPhone, why would I spend so much money on a bigger iPhone that isn't a phone and that won't replace my iPhone? He understands some appeal to it and stuff, but at the same time, he was asking a lot of questions that the answers were not particularly pleasing to. Hmm. So, can it run Office? Well, not from Microsoft. Apple's iWork suite. And he was like, well, that, you know, because he actually tried iWork on the Mac, and it caused him a lot of trouble sharing documents with his workmates, so he wasn't keen on that idea. Mm-hmm. And I said, what about round-tripping files to it? And I said, well, there you've hit on a whole other problem. And you have to sort of import an expert from this iWork thing. And he just didn't see it as being any way ready for use by people in his line of work at all.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I was looking at it, just trying to do stuff in numbers. You know, I'm not a big numbers fan on my best day. But just trying to, like, make a graph. Oh, my God, it's impossible. I'm tracking my steps with a pedometer right now, and I have successfully beaten it into having a graph that has the number of steps on the vertical axis and the date across the bottom, but I cannot get it to show the date. There's nothing there, and then there's this weird legend at the top that says steps for one symbol, steps for another symbol, and date for a third symbol, which makes no sense because there's only one line being drawn. And I can't find any instructions anywhere that explain it to me. I got to go hunt down through Screencast Online, see what I can find. But there's no way it's anything like an Excel, not even close.
I would have thought, actually, that graphing would be one of the things that should be easier on a tactile device.
Oh, you would think, but no, it's
you're not making a graphic. I mean, it, of all things, it should be nicer, but there you go. Guess
they
not.
They want it to be the graph they want it to be.
Yeah.
I guess can show you when we get together.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, speaking of apps from Apple that are really disappointing, I just before I left, I downloaded and installed Mobile iMovie. What a turkey.
Oh, really? I haven't tried it yet.
I just wanted to do something trivially simple. I had one clip. I wanted to put a title on the front and my name on the end and upload it somewhere.
Yeah? You can't
Should
do that?
Should be trivial. No. Not without some serious hackery.
Really?
For a start, you can't just have a blank screen with some text on it. Nope. Oh. You can't have a title on a clip that appears and disappears. The title is there for the entire clip.
Oh.
I don't want to have a big title on my entire video. I just want it at the start. I want it to vanish away.
Hmm.
No. So what I ended up having to do...
Split the clip?
You can't split the clip.
Oh, you can't?
Or if you can, I certainly haven't figured out how. Hmm. I've tried every type of tap and pinch and scroll and two fingers and three fingers. I've tried everything I could dream of. So what I ended up doing was adding the same clip in twice and cropping it. Once cropping off the first 3 minutes and leaving just that, or 3 seconds, and once cropping off... So cropping it down to just the first 3 seconds and then cropping it down to everything but the first 3 seconds and then getting those to line up properly.
Jeez.
I just thought, this is ridiculous. It should be the easiest thing in the world should be to title a single clip. You have one clip, you've taken it, you want to just put something in the front, something on the end, and send it up to YouTube. Really, really difficult. I felt ripped off, I have to say.
Wow. Well, I was still toying with the idea of doing it, but I guess not.
Well, maybe when version 2 comes out and Sanity comes into it, but this really, compared to what Steve Jobs said on stage, you can now edit video. No, you can't. I was exceptionally cranky. But anyway, a lighter note, sort of the one point where I sort of slightly piqued Dad's ears in terms of the businessy aspect of things is that it does do VGA out if you get the appropriate adapter, so you could, in theory, bring just it to go give a presentation. That sort of had a response, but most of the rest of them were like,
But only from certain applications.
Yeah.
If they've built it in correctly, that's about the only thing you can do.
Yeah, but it does work in the slideshow program.
Of Keynote.
Yeah.
Which doesn't translate Keynote app presentations or PowerPoint presentations particularly well. The import and export of those, they get all weird when they get into the iPad, even if it's iWork.
That's disgraceful.
I've had like font changes. Now, I haven't tested it recently, and there have been a lot of updates. I tested it in the first couple of weeks. But I mean, they're the ones who actually had the applications, right? I mean, you don't cut Apple the slack. You cut everybody else for the first couple of months.
Absolutely. And certainly you don't cut Apple the slack for not being able to take a file from one of their programs and open it in one of their other programs.
That's something I expect out of Microsoft.
Well, yeah, and in fairness, I did say to him, yeah, but you get that between different versions of Office, too. And he went, well, yeah, but within the company, we all use the same version.
Like, actually, yeah. Well, the reason I pick on Microsoft there is I used to use a Mac at work, and I would use Microsoft Office for Mac, and I would I would send – it was always PowerPoint. It was never – Excel was always fine, but PowerPoint to PowerPoint, it would get weird when it got over to the Windows side. But then I tried using OpenOffice instead, and it translated perfectly.
That's not good.
So that's why I've got to mock Microsoft for that one.
Yeah. So it was just interesting to get the different reactions, because I'm pretty sure if you said to Mum, you know, if someone were, you know, do you want someone to give you one of these? She'd say, yeah. And whereas Dad would probably go, meh.
Interesting. No, I've got a couple of applications. Like, I am really digging on this MindNote. I did a review of it last week, and I'm using it for everything. Like I'm like I said, I'm doing a mentoring blog at work, and every time I think of an idea, it's like, ooh, I'll put that in. I'm using it for my packing list. I'm using it for the review I'm going to do of the BlackBerry Torch. Every time something hits me, yeah, I got a BlackBerry Torch to test. So
I'd be most curious what you make of that.
I'll have it to play with when we get over there. Just one quick thing. It's not going to fare well if you compare it to, say, a modern device like an iPhone or an Android.
Well, aren't you supposed to compare it to a modern device
rather than an old device? No, because it's important in business to compare it to the crappy BlackBerry you had before. That might be a more relevant comparison. It fares reasonably well under those circumstances.
But that's not a way to actually sell devices, surely, because people in business do actually, you know, see iPhones their kids have and go, ooh, I want that, and
but people in business don't get to choose what they use at work. So it is relevant.
No, IT managers do, so I'm sure it has a wonderful, I'm sure its feature list is wonderfully complete.
Yeah, so, but anyway, why did I bring up the torch? Oh, so...
Actually, there's a thing that just occurs to me. Oh, no, your phones are on AT&T, so they will work over here.
Oh, they... Good. Yeah, because they're...
Because as long as they're GSM phones. I'm just thinking, if you have a CDMA phone, you can give me your number all you want. It ain't going to help.
Right. But anyway, back to the BlackBerry Torch. The reason I brought it up was I'm doing, as I'm messing around with it, I like to play with things for a couple of weeks if it's, you know, something pretty serious like this. And over the couple of weeks, I've just started doing a MindNode mind map of it. And every time I think something, like I take a picture with a camera, oh, I got to review the camera. Here's what I thought that day, you know, and it's a way to collate all the ideas. And then I can make it'll be easier to write the assessment and make sure I include everything I thought was important at the time. So
it's a really good idea.
As a business application, that's something you might naturally not think of when you give somebody an iPad like your dad. But there's those kind of odd little apps that might help. But as a device in place of a laptop, no, not even close.
Yeah, and I think they need to sort of deal with the big glaring problems, because lots of cool little apps I don't think makes up for the basic, but I can't get my spreadsheets in and out.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Or, say, like, printing?
You see, yeah, little things like that, yeah. They might make a difference.
I don't print, but apparently that's important to a lot of people.
Yeah, I do some printing, not from the iPad, obviously. When you're, you know, preparing accounts and stuff, it's useful to have printouts of things.
Yeah, there are times.
Yeah, there definitely are times.
Just, I know people who print like crazy still, and I'm like, really? What for? So I go to their offices to get scratch paper. I do this.
Yeah, because there's loads of it in the printer.
I just tell her I dumpster dive in her office to go get my, because I just like grabbing a piece of scratch paper, you know, something that nobody's going to use, and instead of using a notepad or something like that. And it's great. I just go to her office for the junk.
Isn't it an interesting irony that, you know, the computer was meant to bring us the paperless office, and what it's actually done is made it infinitely easier to waste infinitely more paper?
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Oh, so overall, four very different reactions to it. Three very positive, one meh.
Meh. Yeah, meh, I think sums it up. It's like, yeah, okay, I wouldn't, you know, if you gave it to me, you know, just for nothing, sure, I'll take it. Yeah, why not? But I could never imagine them taking out the credit card for one.
Mm. And that's really the bottom line, right?
That's the test, yeah.
Now, was your brother there?
Yeah, he doesn't do technology. He's called it one of those thingies. Apparently his brother-in-law has one, and he didn't get it, so I didn't include him because he doesn't do technology.
So we have an abstain vote.
We have an abstention for sure.
Well, that actually turned out to be a lot more meat than you thought it would in this discussion. I thought that was interesting. I still cannot even imagine. I would move before I'd live where there was 3 kilobytes per second internet.
Yeah, ditto. Oh, wait, I did, because I used to live there, now I don't.
Exactly. Well, I guess we're about out of material here.
We're about out of material here, and next week we get to do it in person.
God, that's just surreal. You know, I want somebody to look up for me. Here, Connor, we'll put you on the task here. How long has Chit Chat Across the Pond been going? I'm too lazy to go back and look at all the episodes and find it. Oh, actually, wait a minute. No, I did, because I wrote an email to Rafe Needleman about his stealing Bart's "until next time, happy computing" ending line. So I did go back and figure it out. Now I don't remember what I did said, though. So I have to go back and find that. But after all these years, to actually meet in real life, that's just going to be, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be good fun. Oh, well, the MacRack lads were in touch to ask me exactly when the tweet up was and stuff, so they'll be there too.
All right, good. So obscenities will prevail then. Good.
Yeah, you can't be too sensitive to obscenities in Ireland. We tend to use them like they're going out of fashion.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Anyway, until next time, happy computing and safe travels.
Thanks, Bert. Bye-bye. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show this week, and I hope you can make it to the live show next week to support Katie Floyd of the Mac Power Users podcast, hosted at MacPowerUsers.com. Heck, why don't you subscribe to the Mac Power Users, too? She and David Sparks do a fantastic show. It'd be great if you could send in some audio reviews to her at Katie@MacPowerUsers.com. She'd really appreciate the help. You can send her dumb questions, too. She's armed with the dumb question corner music, and she's not afraid to use it. If you're in England, Ireland, or Belgium, we sure hope to see you at one of the tweet-ups. So check podfeet.com for the schedule of the NoSillaCast European Nerd Tour. I'll be reading email at allison@podfeet.com and tweeting my little heart out at twitter.com/podfeet while we're gone. So thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.